Mapping Doctors is an NIHR-funded multidisciplinary research project at Lancaster University. A quick disclaimer, this study is funded by the NIHR, but the views expressed are those of the members of the team and are not necessarily those of the NIHR or the Department of Health and Social Care. Hello and welcome to the Mapping Doctors podcast. My name is Ewan Lawson and I'm a GP and senior clinical lecturer at Lancaster Medical School. Each of these podcasts explores an area of the work we are doing with various members of the team. And for this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Liz Brewster and Dr. Chunki Chikar. I'm going to get them to introduce themselves. Liz.
Hello, lovely to be back. So I'm Liz Brewster. I am the PI for the Mapping Doctors project.
Hi, I'm Chunki. I'm a medical sociologist and I've been working on the work package, which is looking at the doctor's biographical account using interviews. So we interviewed 100 doctors and I contributed to that bit.
Excellent. Thank you. So today we want to talk a little bit about gender. And we very much know that medicine used to be predominantly male, and it's still predominantly male in some sectors, and not so much in others. But things have changed in terms of the overall numbers. I wondered if you could just talk us through some of the what we know in terms of facts and figures as it stands, Liz.
So as you said, Ewan, medicine used to be predominantly male, and it's only really in the past kind of two decades or so the past 20 years, that things have really been quite different. We have some data that kind of looks across time. So if you go back to the 1990s, they still had a national working group on women in medicine, and they reckoned that the kind of shift had gone from women being about a quarter of the total admissions in the 1960s to being around, at that point, 56% of the total admissions by around 2008. And what we've seen over time, I see it now in my own work at the medical school, is that we get a lot more female students coming through than we do male students. And what that means really is that we're moving towards gender parity now. So in the overall workforce, in the medical workforce, we've got around 49% women and 51% men. That's according to the General Medical Council's latest statistics. But the thing that's still really interesting and shows that we haven't really got complete gender parity is that the medical specialties really vary. So there are a lot fewer women in surgery, for example. There are more women in obs and gynae. And we also see that women are underrepresented in senior leadership roles.
That goes through some of it. Sets the scene with a few numbers, but obviously we've got Chunki with us today, and I know that this is your bag as well, Liz. That we really want to talk about some of the interview data and get away from the numbers and get into experiences and understanding of what's going on a little bit. Perhaps Chunki, I could come to you because you've already published. The team has already published a paper on this. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about the title of that paper and what it involved.
Our paper was entitled Gender Flexibility and Workforce in the NHS, a qualitative study. So when we're writing that paper, we haven't even finished the interviewing 100 doctors. But what was so striking in the kind of initial analysis stage was that the sort of currency of flexibility in medical career. So probably flexibility is overall very important sort of social capital, but how especially it was important for doctor's career. And when you can't really afford that level of flexibility that medical career asks you to exercise, then essentially you're being disadvantaged in your medical career choices, being able to stick to the specialty you're really passionate about. So it just, the paper just came to us and like sort of crying out to be written. So that's how we ended up writing this paper halfway through data collection.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it was so striking, wasn't it, when we were kind of reading these accounts of how demanding medicine was as a training pathway and a career, and how people were expected to make these kind of sacrifices in terms of where they went in the country and, you know, working long hours and things like that. And how, in particular, for women and for women and, you know, people that have children, if they were in a position where they had, young children, for example, it was very difficult in terms of things like childcare. And so people were making compromises and giving up, in some cases, on pursuing a particular specialty or a particular career pathway because they felt that they just couldn't fit it in with family life.
Yeah, one of the phrases that popped out with this that I noticed in terms of results of that was that linear, continuous, full-time career pathway. And that's very much been the norm, hasn't it?
What we were quite cautious about when we were writing up this paper was that the readers don't go and say, oh dear, it's a female issue again, it's about childcare. No, it is bigger than that. So gender here is sort of shorthand for the kind of social lack of flexibility by design, rather than it being their fault or shortcoming. So we would really like to hone in the message that, you know, anyone with, you know, your children, of course, but a care responsibility or you know, people with their own health issues, or indeed people just want to work part-time or want to take a career break, whatever sort of outside of the norm, it was quite limited for them to exercise that agency. So again, we really would like to emphasize this is not just about gender. It's not just about women with children, but this is a bigger issue, how the existing medical career as a mold quite excluding lots of people who don't fit in that mold.
Yeah, it comes down to a lack of flexibility in many of these regards, doesn't it? Liz, I wonder if you could, from the paper, some other points that came out related to that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for us as well, because obviously medical training changes as it goes forward in time, the training pathways themselves are the least flexible in some ways when people need the most flexibility in their life. So you're trying to make a decision when you're in your kind of 20s around what you're going to do, where you're going to live. Maybe you meet your partner, you're thinking about that idea of settling down. All of those things have to be accounted for in terms of relationships with your medical training and what you want to do for your career. And we've got some really interesting stories in the data set about people, you know, kind of deciding to move pretty much halfway across the country for a training number versus people who are going, well, I have to kind of stay here because I've got the family support around me. And so people are being advantaged or disadvantaged accordingly. We think it's a real issue for equality and diversity overall, because actually there's this kind of idea that only certain people really are able to progress through the career pathway to fit into certain specialties. And we see this in some of that patterning of the numbers we talked about at the start, but also, you know, in terms of making it to be represented in senior leadership roles and kind of driving the ship forwards in the future.
I think one of the things, it often has a deep personal cost to the doctors involved, Chunki.
So we came across sort of doctors telling us about the kind of burnout, especially during COVID, during kind of really difficult time of sort of early stage of their childcare, and how difficult it was for them to come back to their training. And one, I think, participant frame it as falling off the ladder. That's kind of quite powerful expression, isn't it? That's how they actually felt. And when they came back to work, there is no kind of returner program for them to really pick it up. So if I may go on to talk about this particular participant, I was really struck by the kind of resourcefulness of this person, decided to pick up sort of locum position so that this person just have a bit of leeway back to work. So that would be one example of how individuals really work really hard to make their difficult career satisfactory, but also, yeah, as you pointed out, with a great personal cost unfortunately, in some cases, and some people end up leaving or indeed deciding or contemplating leaving medical career or taking a longer break than necessary.
Did anything come out of the paper? Obviously, more flexibility. Is it as straightforward as that in terms of finding out ways to make medical training pathways more flexible? Has anything specific come out? Any thoughts on how this can be addressed further in the future?
We gathered a lot of really heartbreaking, in some ways, examples of how people felt they'd been quite badly treated. And I think that there is a lot we can learn from, you know, just doing the opposite of some of those things. In terms of letting people do things like job sharing and being aware of things like the need for wraparound childcare and things like that to actually support family life. And it is really tricky because we're talking about this in terms of doctors and, you know, making sure that they can stay in the profession, which is the goal. But at the same time, we still need that kind of service provision. We need to make sure that nights and on calls and out of hours services are available to the general public. So you've got this real tension between the need for flexibility to keep people in the profession and also this need for making sure that we have the services that we kind of don't take for granted, but definitely need to make sure are available.
Yeah, Chunky, any thoughts on the future here? What could be done differently?
This is probably not a bullet point that can be implemented, unfortunately. But I think we expect a huge amount of flexibility in healthcare as a healthcare user. So we want healthcare to be as flexible as possible to accommodate our needs. Yet very little flexibility is granted to healthcare workforce. And I think just calling that out and saying, look, you think doctor's career is just paved in a nice, sleek, linear way, and then they can just stick to it, and then there will be this glorious profession forever. We just really wanted to bring out that wasn't the case. And I wondered whether knowing that sort of humanized doctors, but also really think about what, if we want to be looked after really well, how can we look after healthcare professionals better? And I think the start would be, let's address flexibility issue, however complex it is. So I'm afraid it wasn't sort of a catchy policy, but that's a takeaway message I really want to bring out from this paper.
Well, I think that's a good takeaway message perhaps for us to finish on, that we just sometimes all you can do is call it out and point out what it is that's going on. And I think it's a very powerful message. Chunky, Liz, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.